Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen here. Well, you know, I've always found it curious and ironic that both the noun and the verb practice have been used to describe a life in the field of clinical medicine, when in reality, the common definition of the word, that is, systematic exercise for the purpose of acquiring a skill or proficiency, in no way reflects that life. I mean, a fine physician isn't practicing to heal. He or she is healing. And perhaps the consummate example of a life of healing can be found in the career of Dr. Fred Roberts, age 92, a Syracuse pediatrician who has cared for more than 400,000 patients over the past 69 years. And Dr. Roberts joins us this morning fresh from his retirement party given by his colleagues at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Roberts.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, with all those years of practice, you must now be perfect. Is that correct?
Oh, my goodness. Still trying.
Still trying. I think you may have achieved it by now. So, you are easily the oldest practicing and longest practicing pediatrician in Central New York. Is that true?
It's a frightening sound. I can remember when I was a new kid on the block.
Oh, tell us about that. Now, first of all, you were born and raised in Syracuse, is that correct? Okay, so you've lived here your whole life.
Lived here all that time.
Did you ever live elsewhere?
Yes, sure. When I was in the service, my wife and I lived elsewhere. And also when I was taking my training at various spots in New York and Chicago. And then finally came back to my native ground in Syracuse.
So you've been practicing here for that long?
Since 1946, late 1946, early 1947.
Tell us how you got your training. I understand you graduated from Nottingham.
I graduated from Nottingham High.
And then?
Then I went to Syracuse and got an AB degree in liberal arts. Then I went to medical school, spent four wonderful years here.
And that was part of?
SU. Mm-hmm. And then spent 1 year as an intern in what was known as the Syracuse Medical Center, and then went to Grasslands Hospital in Westchester County, spent a year there, then went to Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago to do a further pediatric residency, and then was in practice in Chicago for about 5 months until I entered the service. And I was overseas for about 16 months until I came back to Syracuse and started to practice with no patients.
It's true for most people as
That's
they start.
Right. And I thought I'd never make it, but spent 60 wonderful years in practice before I started volunteering at Upstate Medical University Clinic.
Yeah.
And spent 5 years there until my alleged retirement last month.
Well, you know, it's amazing as you say alleged because I think you're going to start a new chapter.
I got a lot of ideas.
I'm not surprised. I have a feeling that you do. You're really like the Ever-Ready Bunny or whatever, the Duracell Bunny keeps going. I'm really curious, though, about how you decided to choose pediatrics when you did how you chose medicine. Why did you decide to go into medicine?
Well, my father was a doctor,
and
I modeled after him. And as a result, I'd planned to practice with him. And my brother also is a doctor, and he's younger. He was going to practice. We were going to have a little trio in our family. And unfortunately, my father died at 49 while I was in medical school as a junior. And it changed my outlook. As how I got into pediatrics, that's a long story. There's not enough time to tell. I'll tell you briefly what it was. That my wife and I married, we'd had a blind date, and it so happened that she was a patient of my dad's, and she had diphtheria, and he came to her, made a house call. She was critically ill, and he saved her life. About 15 years later, I had a blind date, and my blind date was with Ann, my future wife. We came to the house, and there I was, seeing the same people that my father told me about. And so one thing came to another, and 5 years later we were married.
That's an incredible story. That's such a beautiful story. It also says a lot about this whole notion of staying in one town mm-hmm. and the kind of threads that run through it and all the connections that are made. And I know for one that you must have treated a lot of people in Syracuse that we know, both parents
yeah,
and children and grandchildren even.
Well, that's the most gratifying part of medicine. Mm-hmm. It's not the wonderful science that has taken us to new heights. It's magnificent. Things that we do now, we couldn't do then. And it's exciting, and the future is beautiful. But we've lost that homey relationship that exists between patient and doctor. And that's what I would miss if I ever did fully retire and never put a stethoscope in my ears again.
So, in fact, you retired at one point, I think at age 85, and then decided to go and devote yourself in a voluntary way to treating inner-city children, right?
That was back in when I was 76, and I started to practice as a result of some newspaper articles about my alleged retirement. And that time I talked to Amber Smith, and we had a little chat. And as a result, some people came recruiting someone who could do what I wanted to do. So I was recruited to start a practice at Krauss for indigent children primarily, which we did. And we incorporated that as a new model. We had a mixture of private patients from my former practice and the patients who were on assisted help.
Amazing. And you did that for a long time.
For about 10 years.
Wow.
And then I started another practice, which lasted about 6 or 7 months, and then I retired again. And I was very ill at ease because I had nothing much to do, and I wrote a couple of books, and I wanted to get back into the practice of medicine. So I volunteered and worked for 5 years as a volunteer physician and teacher at Upstate and the pediatric clinic. Mm. And it was a very enjoyable experience.
And you certainly made tremendous contributions with that work. Tell us quickly about those books you wrote. What were the books that you wrote?
Well, the first book I wrote was Lullabies and Nightmares. This was about the experiences of a young doctor starting out in practice and the pitfalls, the difficulties, and the rewards that you had in that practice. The second book was called Children That's Courageous in Their Family. And that was done with a purpose of sharing the wonderful experiences I had with some patients, how magnificent they were in addressing the problems they face with fatal illness. Mm. And we were fortunately able to raise a lot of money for that, which went to Children's Hospital.
Went to the Golisano Children's Hospital. Wow, that's amazing. So when you talk about some of the things that you learned along the way, both in terms of following your patients and their families, what do you think was the most fulfilling thing that you felt as a pediatrician? What was your greatest source of fulfillment?
I think the fact that we became a part of the lives of our patients. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to keep your distance and be very scientific about everything. But they need someone to lean on, and sometimes the doctor may be able to help them find the proper course to relieve some of their worries and help them adjust to the problems that they face and help them go along with the joys that they have.
It's interesting because I read somewhere recently that one of the most incredibly powerful things that contributes to healing is compassion. And it sounds like that was something that was a very strong element offered your patients.
We always thought that there were two words that should go together, passion for your practice and compassion for your patients.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it's interesting because I have a son who's just begun in pediatrics, following in his father's footsteps, who is in medicine but not in pediatrics. And I sometimes worry about how someone who is sensitive, obviously someone like yourself, who cares so deeply for the patients, how you can function when you become so involved in the lives of your patients and then there is some tragedy.
It's not an easy thing to do, but if you don't do it, who does? And you can't just set it aside and say, well, we're sorry for your loss. You have to help them in the healing process, and it's not always easy to do.
Mm. What do you think, along those lines, what were some of your greatest challenges? You said what your fulfillments were. What were some of your greatest challenges?
The challenges were to keep abreast of all the wonderful things that are happening and find out that you can't know everything, and to have to know when you have to reach out for help so that you're not the all-knowing. There are so many gaps in our knowledge that it's almost impossible to keep up with the changes. So you have to decide. The first thing the doctor has to do, he has to know whether he's able to handle the given problem, and if he can't, find someone who can. Help the patient find the answer to their questions.
It's interesting because I think that kind of level of humility and recognizing your limitations is crucial to really being an effective physician. But I wonder whether that's always there.
I don't know.
Yeah. Obviously, you have that. It sounds like you and your wife also, Anne, who was a nutritionist, launched the Central New York's first cystic fibrosis clinic.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Well, there was a need for it, and nobody knew much about it. And so as a result, I stumbled into a practice taking care of these patients, and it gradually grew. And ultimately, it became part of the Upstate clinics, and I stayed with that for a while until it was turned over. It's now the marvelous work done by Dr. Ambar and his associates. They're taking my work 20 steps farther.
Mm. Yeah, but it had to start somewhere. It sounds like that was quite groundbreaking on your part as well. So what's the next chapter? What are you thinking of doing going forward?
Well, I'm thinking of writing a little more, and I'm very much concerned about the violence that takes place and how children are exposed to it. So I've written some children's stories which are fantastic and unusual and unrealistic, like fables of the past, but they don't have the gun violence, they don't have the killing, they don't have all the terror things. And I hope that this can also be a Band-Aid on some of the problems they face.
Mm. What do you think... What do you hope for the future in terms of medicine and pediatrics or the newest generation of doctors coming up? What would what words of wisdom would you offer them?
That they have a wonderful opportunity to do an immeasurable amount of good to take care of the most important of our citizens, which are the children, to keep them help keep them well and give them a direction for the future, stimulate them to do the best they can, and be there to advise them if you can, if they ask you to conquer some of the Alps that they have to climb to face the future.
Wow. Well, it sounds like there's still more for you to do.
I hope so.
I think so.
I
do.
So. I just don't want any more retirement parties, that's all.
Really? Well, maybe you won't retire again.
Yeah, well,
maybe you'll just keep working. Yeah, well, I appreciate your coming in so much. I can't wait to hear many, many, many more things about what you're going to be doing going forward, because you obviously have done so much here. And I think, as you said during one of our breaks, that you also took care of my husband and his family. So I'm grateful to you for that as well. And now he's got two sons in medicine as well. So following in your footsteps. Well, thank you, Dr. Fred Roberts, consummate pediatrician. Thanks for joining us today and sharing your story. We've got to take a short break. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYL.